On this segment of Radio Parallax, we are privileged here to have as our guest Sean Minton. Sean has been a professional in the broadcasting realm for the last 10 years. He has covered the Portland Trailblazers, the Seattle Sonics, the Seattle Mariners, has done play-by-play, I guess, for Washington State University, and hosted a talk show for many years on the subject of sports. So welcome aboard, Sean.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Now, one subject that I want to jump right into, being that you are a professional and without a doubt have an opinion on this subject, is what is the deal with the Kings and the officiating in the conference finals?
Well, okay, the first thing you have to remember is I'm not a longtime Sacramento resident, so the opinion you're going to be getting from me is the opinion of an outsider and not somebody who has lived and died with this team ever since they've been in Sacramento. But I can give you my observations as someone who has been in the business for quite some time and someone who, you know, watched all seven games and can give you some insight based on the fact that I used to cover a bunch of professional teams.
That makes you more valuable. That makes you more objective and more valuable to us.
Good. Because I don't want people to think I'm going to do this homerism thing that I see with the local newspaper and with a lot of the local media in terms of, especially in Game 6, where the consensus from the fans and the people here was we were robbed because of the foul situation. Again, I'd have to go back and look at the statistics again, but I know that Sacramento was outshot at the free throw line by L.A., 34-13 or something like that. I'm sure the fans probably have those numbers seared into their brains at this point. I unfortunately did not take the time to memorize that. What I can tell you about that game is there is no conspiracy, folks of Sacramento. There is nobody sitting on the top of Arco Arena talking to the officials in earpieces saying, this must go seven. LA must win this series.
Right.
Although I would also be the first to admit that a series between New Jersey and Sacramento would have all the appeal of Atlanta and Minnesota. I mean, it was not going to be a ratings grabber. The ratings were horrible anyway. But getting back to the original point on Game 6 itself, I think, again, that's just something seen through the eyes of true diehard fans, and I can appreciate that. But as an objective observer, there may have been a couple of calls, maybe three or four, where you can look and say, Shaq was flopping, or you missed a foul here, or there was a situation where there shouldn't have been a foul call. But overall, I thought the officiating for the series was actually pretty fair. It was excellent in Game 7. I know a lot of people thought that they were screwed over in Game 6, but even if there was a little misjustice in Game 6, it did not carry over into Game 7. Everybody knows Sacramento had ample opportunity to win that Game 7. Christie played horribly. He shot the ball horribly. He airballed it. And had Chris Webber been able to step up instead of Bibby all the time, they would have won that series. Everybody on that entire team, except for Bibby, totally choked that series away, in my opinion.
I see. Well, I'm not a basketball fan and don't know the first thing about basketball, but I did notice that there are tremendous fan support here in this town, and people were griping. But people always gripe. And as someone who hosts a talk show, you know that people love to come in and just gripe just for a living. But when I saw that the national news media was picking up the story and that Ralph Nader had gotten involved and saying that the National Basketball Association needs to take a look at this, that really woke me up.
Well, I'm actually reading a book from Ralph Nader right now called Crashing the Party. And I when it gets to the point where a politician is going to step in and wants an inquiry and things like that, that's just a guy that's trying to grab some headlines. The main problem with Sacramento is the main problem that people in Portland had when I was there, and that is this incredible inferiority complex with the city of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I saw when I moved from Seattle to Portland, where Portland was always considered the ugly stepchild of Seattle, and I think that that holds true here in Sacramento as well. I think that one of the things that really got people riled up after they lost that series was when Shaquille O'Neal said, tell your children the capital of California is not Sacramento, it's Los Angeles. Uh-huh. That was an obvious dig at Sacramento, uh-huh. And Shaquille is just playing the city like a fiddle, and they're eating it up.
Well, what about the claim that was that earlier on that the Lakers were complaining that the officiating was going against them, with the implication being that it would make a lot more, well, the implication being that perhaps people were interested in getting a seven-game series?
No, I completely disagree, and the reason that I disagree is these officials are graded game after game. And the thing you have to remember about the playoffs is only the best of the best officials are involved, especially in, say, a Western Conference final.
Well, I am not a basketball fan. I would rather watch ants on a hill than guys going up and down a basketball court in terms of just interest. But I put a call in to a friend of mine who is a big fan, and I said, what is the deal? I mean, apparently everyone's complaining that a guy's nose was bloodied flagrantly in the closing moments of Game 6, and no foul was called, something that Ralph Nader himself specifically cited. The friend of mine said, well, the way this works in sports, and he didn't mean just necessarily basketball, but the way it works in sports is that the marquee players and the marquee teams get the calls, was how he put it. And that when push comes to shove, in a game like this, you know, the Lakers just might get a call that wouldn't otherwise get, and that is accepted.
Absolutely. Your friend is right. The thing I want to point out about your friend is something that you mentioned as you were talking about him. My friend who is a big fan. You see, now he's thinking with his heart. He's not thinking with his head. But getting back to his point, it's true. It happened for Michael Jordan. It happened for Larry Bird. It happened for Magic Johnson. It happens for Shaquille O'Neal. It happens for Kobe Bryant. It happens for Kevin Garnett. For these guys, Allen Iverson, they do get calls. They've earned the respect of the officials. Most of the time, it's not blatant, but if it's a questionable, call, uh-huh, they're going to get the nod.
Does that mean? They've earned the respect of the officials.
They've earned
the officials making objective calls.
Well, you have to remember, sports is entertainment too.
Yes.
The last thing that, as a sports fan, the last thing you want to see is Michael Jordan fouling out of a basketball game, Shaquille O'Neal fouling out of a basketball game. So there is that aspect of the game where, as it comes down to the wire, if Shaquille O'Neal has five, well, he did actually foul out of one of these games. If Shaquille O'Neal has five fouls, mm-hmm, there's 3 or 4 minutes left in the game, and Vlade does his famous flop, or there's a situation where maybe Shaq throws his shoulder into somebody. They may, when I say respect, they may say, okay, well, that was a close enough call where, uh-huh, I'm going to give him the benefit. But if it's obvious, uh-huh, if Shaq throws himself into, say, Vlade again, and this time, uh-huh, it's legitimate, uh-huh, and he sends a guy into the second row of the stands, they're going to make the call. I mean, television is right there, and we've seen it time and time again. If an official blows a call, they see it once. We see it about 50 different times,
right,
and they're cognizant of that. They,
right,
know that's going on, and they try to do the best job they can. I'll tell you something real quick. I have a friend who's an NFL official, uh-huh, and I've talked to him. His name is Ron Blum. He's been an NFL. He's actually an NFL referee now, and, you know, these guys are graded on a curve, and even when he and I have gone out drinking and the guy is sloppy drunk, when I try to tell this guy or I try to ask this guy, come on, you know there's something – even when the guy is just completely drunk, he will never say no. I mean, we do our jobs. We respect our jobs. This is what we do. This is what we're paid for. And to his knowledge, he has never seen an official be partial to the point where he says, look, this is the way this has to end. I'm going to make the determination. Officials just aren't going to do that. I'm sorry, Sacramento. It just doesn't happen that way.
All right. Well, as far as we know, the official view that is that the Warren Commission report still does hold water. No conspiracy. The verdict. Well, all right. But just before we move off the subject of basketball, what is Vlade's famous flop or whatever you?
Vlade he's got a couple of them. He's got a great move, and you saw it time and time again. And again, fans of the Kings know exactly what I'm talking about. You take a guy like Shaquille O'Neal, who's 7'7", 300 pounds. There is not a force on the face of the earth that's going to stop this guy once he makes the determination that he's going to go to the basket. One of the things that Shaquille does is he's just got a mass about him, and he can push people out of the way. So what Vlade will do is there's a little game they play as Shaq is backing down. Vlade will kind of push into him, and then at one point, and only Vlade can tell you when he decides to do it, as Shaq is backing up, Vlade will actually back up. There will be no contact. But Vlade will throw himself to the ground as if he's just been rammed over by a Mack truck and falls to the ground. They just call it the Vlade flop. And the officials are, I mean, they're aware of it now. And a lot of times you would see that he would not get away with it because he's earned that. You see, you're talking about reputations earlier. He has earned the reputation as someone who will take a flop.
Uh-huh.
And so when they see that now, sometimes when there's legitimate contact, he's legitimately been sent to the floor, they may not call it because it's like the boy who cried wolf. He fakes it so many times that eventually yeah, when it really happens, they're going to say, oh, come on, please.
All right. All right. Well, the flop. The flop has been in the news lately because I understand that in the World Cup, flopping has been a finely honed art at this point, and that players from various nationalities are notoriously flopping on the field, alleging injury to get a penalty shot.
Well, it's interesting you should mention the World Cup because I could really care less about the World Cup.
Okay.
But I know what you're talking about.
I didn't follow either, but that's what I heard. I heard that fans all over the world were stunned by the degree to which this sort of chicanery had taken over the play
and
field.
Actually, in the semifinals, Germany against maybe it was Korea, there was a situation where a team was awarded a penalty kick because someone did such a horrible job of flopping. There is, you know,
wait a minute, they penalized the team by giving the other team?
Yeah.
Flopped so unconvincingly that they gave the other team the penalty shot?
Yeah, because the guy was in the box. But I'll tell you the thing about the World Cup that got me is every 4 years they say this is the year that soccer catches on in America. This is, and then they uh-huh. thought this year they made the quarterfinals uh-huh. and this is the year. Uh-huh. I'll give you $100 on the spot if you can name two members of the US soccer team.
I won't take the bet. I don't follow soccer.
Nobody cares.
But
nobody cares about soccer in this country. Nobody ever will.
You know, and you know why? No, I mean, just my opinion, just for what it's worth, which isn't much, but on this subject, you know why it never will catch on? People are not going to watch scoreless ties. Americans are not going to sit still and watch. Okay, there was three scoreless ties yesterday, meaning that in the playoff rounds, nobody advances. Ain't going to happen.
Well, I think what's sad is, if you're going to, you know, there is Major League Soccer in America. It's called MLS. You can devote 2 hours of your life to sitting there and watching two teams not score a single goal. And it's like eating empty calories. You're just sitting there and you're going, why was I doing this? There are so many other things in my life I could have been doing.
Go to the beach and watch the breakers hit the sand.
Sure. I mean,
they kick the ball up, they kick the ball back.
But what's ironic about that is soccer is huge with the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, you
it's
know,
great exercise.
They talk about soccer moms and as a fun recreational sport. It's
tough
great
to beat.
Like that.
Tough
but
to
once
beat.
You start trying to get into the level, you know, plus Europe has, what, like 300 years on us with this sport, that and golf. So it'll be a long time before we ever catch up with them. And frankly, when you look at the way sports is going more towards entertainment, the slam dunk versus the jump shot or the set shot or in football, the celebrations and things, more we go towards that. But you saw that in the World Cup too, just real quick. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights. Every time somebody scored a goal, they would rip off their shirt and run towards the crowd and just, you know.
Following the Brandi Chastain example in the world.
Yeah,
but
no sports bras this time. So a real treat for the ladies.
All right, Sean. So we've covered basketball and the non-American sport of soccer. Let's go to America's national pastime.
Football, sweet.
Baseball.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Ted Williams passed away last week, and I think that Ted Williams is a figure that just transcends sports. He was a man who left twice professional baseball to be a fighter pilot in World War II and the Korean War. It's hard for me to imagine today's prima donna athletes giving up their recliner lounger in the locker room to go sign up for a combat somewhere in the world.
I can't imagine these guys giving up a game to go fight in Grenada. My mom was born in Boston, and she brainwashed me into becoming a Red Sox fan at a very early age. So I knew of him. Well, you know, she was very wise in that. So
how's that gone?
It's you know, when Roger Clemens left, we were disappointed. When Mo Vaughn left, we were disappointed.
As far as I know, you guys have disappointed since the curse of the Bambino set in 1920.
Yeah, that was that. Of course, I wasn't around for that. I hate to say it, but if Manny Ramirez gets healthy again, this could be the year. I know. So anyway, my point is, I was brought up as somewhat of a Red Sox fan. That the interesting thing about Ted Williams is, there's two Ted Williamses. There's the Ted Williams that played baseball in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and managed into the 60s, and then there's a Ted Williams after he retired. Ted Williams, as a baseball player, was a complete jerk along the lines of a Ty Cobb. You know, Ty Cobb was a was racist.
Wait. Ty Cobb was a guy that spiked people deliberately. He went into the stands to punch people out. He pistol whipped a guy. He was an open racist that wouldn't like get in elevators if there was a black man. Ted Williams wasn't that bad.
Ted Williams was just as despised by his teammates. Not in the same categories. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's any of those things. I'm saying that as a teammate and as a person who, let's just say his relationship with the media was not exactly what you'd call the best in the world. When he was a rookie, a writer wrote one bad thing about him. I couldn't even tell you what the article was about, but after that, Ted never talked to the media. He would give them an interview every once in a while after a game. Uh-huh. He would never sit down with a broadcaster, or I guess at that time a newspaper guy. He never did a one-on-one. He just despised him that much because of one single article that was written about him. And of course, if you listen to him during his interviews, he was perhaps the greatest hitter of all time, but he always let the other players on his team know that. If you ever look at a shot of Ted Williams in the dugout with his Red Sox teams, a lot of times you'll see Ted sitting all by himself, and the other 25, 26 players are on the opposite end of the bench. He just was not that well received by his team. The fans loved him. The man could do no wrong because he was such a tremendous baseball player.
Right.
And statistically, you know, with the 406 season and the fact that he missed 5 years of his life, you know, serving his country, you hate to use the word hero because it's so cliche, but you made a great point when you said, you know, would today's athlete give up three games to go do something for his country? Right. And right now the answer is, you know, probably not. The guy, you know, was truly a legend. The other interesting thing about Ted Williams right now is I don't know if you've heard about his son, John Henry.
33-year-old in the minors?
He's playing for the Boston Red Sox, a single-A affiliate, no baseball background whatsoever. They're just allowing him to play because he's Ted's son.
He's a draw, I guess?
Well, the guy is a jerk as well. Back in 1999...
Can he make the grade, though?
No, he's never played organized baseball. This isn't a guy who came up through college and...
High school star,
exactly.
That sort of thing.
No, he's Ted Williams' son. Back in 1999, when the All-Star Game was at Fenway Park, there was a moment where Ted was brought out in a wheelchair. And again, he was not the most coherent man in the world at this time. They brought him out on a wheelchair when they were doing the top 50 players of all time or something like that. And most of the players were literally in tears that this guy was out here. They had that much respect for him. At the time, John Henry was working for a .com company during this whole .com boom. And what he did right before Ted went out, Ted really didn't hardly know where he was at this point. Rather than putting a Red Sox hat on his father's head, he took a hat from the .com company he was working for, slapped it on Dad's head. Dad had no clue what was going on, and sends Dad out there. But wait, I'm not done.
Oh, that's so bad.
Ted asked to be cremated. John Henry has taken Ted's body from, this is the honest God's truth, he has taken the body from the funeral home down to Florida, where he is going to cryogenically freeze his father. And at some point...
To make him a tourist attraction?
Well, what they're going to do
like
is they're going to...
Lenin in Red Square?
Yeah, he's going to be laying like a stiff. They're going to take his DNA, and he's going to probably try to sell his father's DNA. That's the type of jerk that his son is. There's a couple other instances where...
I'm stunned and horrified.
And it's the truth. This is one of those stranger than fiction type things, or stranger than... Then you can't imagine this, but his son has been. Oh, I'll tell you another quick story. About 5 years ago, he was in the hospital. Ted was. He had like after his 19th heart attack or something. This time they didn't think he was going to make it. His son went in with about a dozen baseball bats and baseballs. His father is literally on his deathbed, and he's having his father sign the baseballs and the bats.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's the lineage I'd like to leave too. It's sad.
I was too young to remember Ted Williams as a player as well, but I remember hearing a story that impressed me about the guy that in the 1941 season where he had in effect batted 400. He had a 399.39955 batting average, which would have rounded up to 400. in the final doubleheader game, there was a doubleheader that day, mm-hmm. and he deliberately said to the coach, I am not going to back in to a 400 season. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to play. And he went like, what, 6 for 9 or something?
Went 6 for 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. The nice thing is the team that they were playing, their catcher approached him before the game and said, we're going to pitch to you today. He said, we're not going to give you any pitches, but we're going to pitch to you today, which I thought was not a nice gesture, but a competitive gesture. I mean, it's they're going to give him the opportunity to try to legitimately get the record, but they're not just going to lob him, underhanded pitches. They pitched to him, but as you mentioned, it was a tremendous feat that day. There's nothing else you could say. The other great story about Ted Williams is he's one of only two guys in the Hall of Fame right now who hit a home run his very last time at bat. And the guy's like 41 years old. He jacks one out his last time up.
Yeah.
When he was managing the Senators, he was a very difficult man to get along with because he expected everybody to be as good as him. It's like Michael Jordan with the Washington Bullets.
Yeah.
He has a certain level of where he thinks people should be. They should all be like Mike, and that's just not going to happen.
I gather that oftentimes the premier athlete does make a rather poor coach because his gifts are such that where he doesn't recognize that others have to work for it maybe harder than he did.
Think about the great coaches in history. You look at a Phil Jackson who's...
Seldom great athletes.
Absolutely. That's because a lot of these guys kind of realize my career is going to be 6 or 7 years, and if I want a career in this sport as a coach afterwards, I have to be very observant. I saw it with a lot of the guys. Nate McMillan, who's the coach of the Sonics, now, when I was up in Seattle, Nate, he was a player. He was a good player, and he was a smart player, but he wasn't a great player. But the thing you always notice about Nate is he hung out after practice. He was there early before practice, constantly talking to the coaches. Mm-hmm. And you could see that he was kind of running in his mind, this is kind of something that I would like to do when I'm done.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think great players in general don't make very good coaches because their expectation levels are much higher than probably what they should be.
Well, it's been very interesting and informative, and we certainly appreciate your coming on board, Sean Minton. Please come again.
Thanks, my pleasure.
That about wraps it up for Radio Parallax this week. Thanks to my special guests, Steve Alexander, David Rosenblum, and Sean Minton, as well as the support staff we have down here at 90.3 KDVS. It's more than just a college radio station. It's also a community radio station, and all you alumni out there, I hope you'll consider doing what you can to support KDVS remaining on the air. We'll see you next week, Thursday, 5 o'clock.